There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
The Bookshelf, what you should be reading.
It's all about love and heartbreak today on The Bookshelf. So joining us for a hot take on Less by Andrew Sean Greer, which is the book in question about running away from your ex. A wider look at some other memorable breakups in literature. We've got writer and founder of Dubai Literary Salon, Hanana Zahir. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And Penny McKenzie, longtime librarian at the Old Library.
Hello, everybody.
We already spoke about the wonderful news about the Old Library finding a new home, but I'm going to bring it up again. How excited are you?
I think we are all terribly excited. My WhatsApp group has been going absolutely bananas. I've almost considered putting it on silent because they're so thrilled. But not just that. I mean, the wider community are really interested. Our Facebook page has just gone nuts. We've had like 6,000-7,000 people show an interest in it, which tells you that there are a lot more readers out there than we thought.
Yay! Sorry, I'm so excited. It's put me in a good mood all day. So moving on to Less by Andrew Sean Greer and love and heartbreak and all that jazz. It's got an absolutely brilliant premise. So let me tell you what it's about. Arthur Less is a writer in his 50s who finds out that his ex is getting married and he's still not over them. The wedding invitation is on his desk, and if he says no without a good reason, it looks like weakness, like he still has feelings for them. But saying yes means he actually has to put up with the excruciating experience of attending his ex's wedding. So he engineers the perfect excuse for turning down the invitation. And what is that perfect excuse?
He's got stuff to do and a life to live. There are invitations. There are, I think there's like a literary festival. There's, you know, lots of stuff that he needs to do and he just can't be there.
That's right.
A whole lot of things that he wouldn't ordinarily have done anyway. It kind of pushed him out of his comfort zone, don't you think?
It's basically like every single literary event that he would otherwise have said no to, he says yes, 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 yes. And I think he ends up doing a neat little circle of the world with his itinerary, which I don't think could have happened unless in fiction. In the real world, they would all have clashed.
Absolutely.
That was my one issue with the book.
I'm sure there were things that did clash that he didn't say yes to, but it was a real mixture of places and types of events that he went to. And very critical of the literary world, the way he was treated at the various events that he did attend.
Yeah.
Although I would say not entirely unrealistic.
No, I think they're quite realistic in many cases.
I think that the most important question to ask whenever we're reviewing a book on here is the basic, like, did you enjoy it? So first of all, I wanted to like Less more. No pun intended. Yeah, honestly, pun intended. Because I personally found it refreshing that the gender of the characters in the main relationship was handled so matter-of-factly. That was nice. But that didn't change the fact that, quite frankly, I found the telling in parts a little bit dull. Was I the only one?
Penny and I were talking about this before the show. And I think, for me, I enjoyed it simply because it was simpler.
Okay.
And I liked the quote-unquote lesser aspect of it.
I think you have to separate the character from the style and the writing of the book because he was meant to be who he was. So you see him, I think, exactly as he is. He is a boring man. He has, his whole life, he has followed very interesting people and he's been involved in their lives. And I think the interest there is that their interest in him was, first of all, that he was a beautiful creature, I think, reading it. I think he was rather pretty. And that he was probably quite kind and he didn't make too many waves. And so he was always welcome along. And I think he had a really good heart. But he was not interesting. He wasn't wildly outrageous or anything like that. But he's written so beautifully that you're almost driven to get frustrated with him because you're meant to be frustrated with him, I think.
I felt that he was well aware of his own mediocrity.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And or his life was sort of had been previously about enabling genius, and now he's being put in positions where he is being looked at. I mean, there's the lovely comments about an evening, constantly when people don't turn up to see him because it's just
an
him.
Evening with Arthur Less. There's like three Arthur people Less. In the audience.
It reminded me a little bit of Jennifer Egan and the sort of style of writing that which I did enjoy. And I think that he was very much himself right the way through the book, and that was just how it is.
And I think that's the thing that I liked about it. I mean, taking the writing aspect aside,
just as a character, I think he is so hapless and so just this poor guy trying to make his way through life. I was saying this to Penny earlier. It's almost like he's a fish just trying to swim, but he's not a very good fish. And he's going to keep trying until something lands him somewhere. And I think that's what made me feel very charmed by him and maybe, you know, wanting him to kind of root for him a little bit. Not as frustrated as you.
The whole scene when he's on the balcony trying to get into his hotel room. I mean, he just makes his life hard for himself.
You seem very frustrated, like you want to give him a good talking to.
I would like to do that.
There were some really beautiful moments, though. I mean, overall, I felt like it was a Technicolor premise and I got a sepia delivery. But in between all that, there were some really wonderful moments. And one that I really liked was near the beginning where he has to, one of the events that he says yes to is to interview a science fiction writer called H.H. Mandern. And he's turned up, he's got this wonderful blue suit on, and the organizer says, "You're not wearing that, are you?" So he manages to get this kind of weird helmet, space helmet to wear for the whole interview. And he turns up, and H.H. Mandern has got serious food poisoning, and he has to try and make this hour and a half event still work. And it's just described beautifully. It says, "No one out there in the theatre will know who he is when he will help H.H. Mandern, sick with food poisoning, but unwilling to let down his fans onto the stage. He will be introduced merely as a huge fan. When he leads the hour and a half long interview, filling it with extended descriptions when he sees the writer is failing, answering some questions from the audience when Mandern turns his weary eyes to Les, when he saves this event, saves this poor man's career, still nobody will know who he is. They are there for H.H.H. Mandern. They are there for his robot Peabody. They have come dressed as robots or space goddesses or aliens because a writer has changed their lives. That other writer sitting beside him, face partly visible in the open visor of a space helmet, is inconsequential. He will not be remembered. No one will know or even wonder who he is."
The sad truth of publishing life. This actually takes me back to so many conversations that I have with my writer friends who will, I mean, none of them have had to introduce H.H.H. Mandern, but it is a very accurate portrayal. So in that sense, I think for me, it was, you know, I found the character charming, obviously, and then B, looking at that and looking at the way these dynamics play out is what drew me in. Probably, now, you're right, Penny, probably somebody should grab him by the collar and say, "Well, then do something about this. Don't just sit here." But just in terms of his, you know, lack of agency, I feel like it's a very accurate and real thing that it happens to a lot of people. And often we're used to reading stories about dynamic characters who are doing things or in extraordinary circumstances. And this is, to me, more about just the ordinary aspect of life.
And there is a charm in that. There are many books that have been written about this kind of character that you do remember. I mean, I think we mentioned earlier, I would think up straight up The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, you know, that really gentle life that she led. Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day. These are gentle books with lovely little touching characterizations that take place within it. Did anyone notice the thing about the suit? How his suit, as the story goes on, gets damaged, and at the end, his new suit is not shiny and blue. His new suit is pale colored.
No, I didn't notice that.
Look at you.
I love the description of how he got the suit.
Yes.
Was it in Hong Kong? China.
And he went to
a tailor sort of outside his own comfort zone and then forgot all about it. And this suit arrived, which made him more than who he was when he wore it. And it became what he wore at every necessary event.
Yeah, and the way I see it is that as the suit gets damaged, as the story progresses, he grows into himself and he accepts who he is.
So he's taking off that layer of...
So not a comment on the dulling and of age, I suppose, but more...
No.
No,
of growing into your own skin instead of putting a skin on, perhaps.
Yeah, he grew into himself and the suit changed. You know, he wasn't trying to be this flamboyant thing that he wasn't. He became comfortable with that.
Whoever, the ordinary, lesser version of himself.
Yeah.
Okay, speaking of you spotting things, Penny, you have a spooky knack for identifying prize-winning books. So you called The Booker Prize with Lincoln and the Bardo, well done, and The Carnegie with Where the World Ends, which really shocked me. Did this feel like a Pulitzer winner to you?
It didn't. And then I went and looked at the list of all of the Pulitzer winners going back from when it first started. And do you know, there are very few Pulitzer winners that actually stand out in the history of the prize. So it then made sense. But by the same token, it has the literary weight of someone who knows what they're talking about, who knows, we've spoken about this, about people who can reference other genres and novels and writers and bring depth to a book where if you don't do that, you can't have a winner. You have to have some legs.
We were just speaking about this and just it hit me when we were talking about the storyline that this reminds me of Eliot's The Love Song of Alfred J. Prufrock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I had written a whole paper on, and I was, you know, then we Googled it and discovered that, yes, just like the book Arthur Less is writing is also about walking through the streets of San Francisco and pondering over life, which is what, you know, Eliot's character, I mean, so all of a sudden we were like, all right, so this makes sense because it's referencing a lot of things that are deeper in literature and taking from, you know, sort of giving a nod to other writers.
Wow. Until you'd mentioned that, I hadn't realized. And now it's like The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, the character in novel form. Yes, yeah. You're so right. We're carrying on the conversation about Less by Andrew Sean Greer next and also looking at some of the most notable relationships and breakups in literature. Do you have a best worst couple in literature opinion? If so, text us on 4001.
The Bookshelf, what you should be reading.
Only because we're talking about love and heartbreak on The Bookshelf, and we've been discussing the Pulitzer winning Less by Andrew Sean Greer. That is the book that we're reviewing at the moment. It's about running away from an ex and heading straight into all sorts of literary events around the world in order to do so. And it's about the inner turmoil of life as a writer and the amusing anecdotes that surface whenever you travel outside of your comfort zone. And with us on the show reviewing the book, we have founder of Dubai Literary Salon and also writer Hanana Zahir and Penny McKenzie, longtime librarian at the Old Library. Just remind everybody what your voices sound like again.
Hi.
Hello.
That was Hanana. That was Penny. Okay, so in terms of travel, these were the source of a lot of the really funny moments. There were some wonderful anecdotes. Where does Arthur Less travel to in this book?
I've got that. So he went to New York, Paris, Berlin, Morocco, Southern India and Kyoto.
And I don't know about you, but I liked the travel sections of the story because they felt particularly honest. And I was wondering if he was one of those writers who basically conducts all his research from the comfort of his desk and Google, or whether he actually physically has to go to these places and experience them and see them for himself. And I listened to an interview, and apparently he was, before he was a novelist, he was a travel writer, which makes a lot of sense in context of the book. And this is what he had to say about that.
So I'd been to a lot of the places, and I began to put them in the book because I took so many notes as a travel writer. And one of my rules for the book was I could only put in details that I had written down in my notebooks because I didn't want it to be about stereotypes. I wanted it to be about what I actually saw, even if it was unexpected.
There's Andrew Sean Greer talking about how he didn't want his book Less to be about stereotypes. It wanted to be exactly what he had experienced. Did that come across for you in the book?
I think so. I think, I mean, it, like we've said, it's not a very deep exploration of you know, culture in that sense. But what it does not do, which is a successful thing, is it does not make sort of stock characters out of these places that he's going to.
And also, in all honesty, the kind of trip that he's doing is a business trip, and he's going to go to various festivals, etc. And really, when you do that, you don't really get involved in the community so much. You go to your hotel room, you get in a taxi, you go to the venue, and you go back again 9 times out of 10. And we did see that. You know, we get descriptions of him going to the various hotels that he's going to, his trip there, taxi rides, little restaurants that you'll have a quirky meal at, very strange hotels that he stayed in, that kind of thing, which is very true to life. Mm.
Yeah, and also from working at a literature festival, I found it an interesting read to kind of see the blanks being filled in, the bits that we don't necessarily get to see, which was fun.
I like all the stuff that he just doesn't understand what's going on in some of the cases, and he's just got to go with it. But that slight sort of disengagement, this sort of sense of distraction that he's just, okay, I don't quite know where this taxi's taking me, but it's going to end up where I need to be. He just carries on.
That when he goes to Mexico and the festival is entirely in Spanish, and he says, they say, oh, you can't go to anything on the first day unless you speak Spanish. He's like, okay, you're not on until the third day. And he turns up on the second day, like, still, no, everything is in Spanish, come back on day three.
Or even with the German, where he believes so strongly that he's a wonderful speaker of the language, and every single person he meets just looks at him sideways because his German is so terribly bad. That was quite charming, I thought. Didn't I like that?
I agree. And I think also the thing is, it all feels very authentic to his character. So whatever situations that he's landed up in, whichever country he's in, the travels all seem like, a lot of times, I mean, this is one of the struggles when we talk about writing, is people try to explain a culture through a character, and he has not tried to do that. Mm. He's just showing us this guy's experience of that particular place. And that, you know, that's all, as far as I'm concerned as a reader, that's all I need.
If you've just tuned in, we're in the middle of looking at The Bookshelf, a series of books about love and heartbreak, and we're talking about Less by Andrew Sean Greer at the moment. 4001 even is the text line, and we'd like to know if you think you have a best worst couple in literature opinion. It doesn't even need to be a couple, it could be any relationship pairing that you think rocks the book world. Text that into 4001. Now, the premise of this book is basically he's running away from his problem, and his problem is that his ex has invited him to a wedding. And I was actually frankly curious what you think of inviting exes to weddings in the first place.
I think that's a bad idea. I would run as well.
Don't you think it depends entirely on the kind of relationships that you have, romantic relationships that you have? Because as often as not, you could break up with someone and you can still, over a period of time, remain very good friends because they know you so well. It depends on the level of bitterness.
I felt that Arthur as a character, though, is someone who's slightly humiliated by things that haven't worked. And so this relationship that was slightly secretive and yet everybody kind of knew about it at the same time, he just can't bear the thought of it being on... people saying, "Oh yes, that was his ex. That was his ex." I'm not sure
that, but I do think he was genuinely would have been quite heartbroken.
I think so. I mean, there's a line in there about, you know, there's many people who will do, but once you've been in love, you can't just do. It has to be love or nothing. It's worse than living with oneself, I think it says. So I think just taking that into consideration, it sounds like it would have been very difficult for him to watch that happen, which I can maybe sort of relate with.
I don't want to spoil the book too much for everybody. So as part of a wider conversation about breakups in literature, that's kind of where we're going to go now. So we'll leave Less by Andrew Sean Greer there for now. It won the Pulitzer. I think she definitely... Would you recommend it?
Yes.
Yep.
I would, yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
We're all nodding. Yes. Give it a go. All right. So... breakups in fiction, which authors do you think have written the most heartbreaking ones that you can think of? Hanan, I know you've got thoughts on this.
I do. There's Elena Ferrante. She's this Italian novelist, and she has this, it's sort of like an aftermath of a breakup, but it is one of the most beautifully described and intensely psychological look at this woman whose husband has casually left after a lunch and has disappeared for weeks and is nowhere to be found, and then her marriage is over, and just the disintegration of her life and her mental life.
What's the book called?
Days of Abandonment. Okay. Elena Ferrante's Days of Abandonment.
And she is abandoned, or she does the
abandonment? She is abandoned.
She is abandoned. What, are there any books where there's a female character who does the abandoning?
The abandoning.
Oh, come on.
Because well,
shall I give you
yes, my please.
Okay. So for that, it has to be Heathcliff and Catherine from Wuthering Heights. Oh. She is such a revolting human being. And what she does to him is awful.
So is this your worst couple in literature?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Definitely. I mean, she does terrible things to that man. He just adores her and she just tosses him aside.
Specifically, what does she do, though?
Well, she decides to marry for money rather than love. At the end of the day, that's... what she does, you know, which is an awful thing. And then she doesn't just let him go. She kind of toys with him a little bit, I think, as well.
Well, there's so many male characters in so many books doing that to women. It's kind of
it doesn't make it okay.
It's not tit for tat here, you know.
She's not redressing the balance.
No, she's not.
I suppose similarly, you have Great Expectations and...
Yes. Oh, Estella.
Yeah. Estelle.
Oh,
yeah.
That's probably one of my worst.
That's one of my worst.
Also, Romeo and Juliet. Absolutely awful. Sorry.
I would agree with that.
For one thing, she's about 12 years old and he's 16. And they're so melodramatic about the whole thing. I mean, honestly, maybe go to school, get some exams sorted first, figure out what you want to do with your life, and then maybe get involved in this really weird relationship where both families hate each other.
But it is the height of romance, isn't it? Because only at that age can you possibly be so selfishly deeply in love, you know.
Once that's you've why got a it few, annoys me.
Yeah, but it's a wonderful thing, and everyone should experience it at least once. You should have that abandoned love at least once.
I think that's why it annoys me so much, is because it reminds me of how stupid I was when I was younger.
No, Annabelle, you must embrace that.
Embrace the stupidity. Any others on your list, Hanana, for like notable breakups in fiction?
I'm trying to think. I feel like there's a Fitzgerald's book. The name escaped me as I started speaking.
But Gatsby, Great Gatsby.
But there's another one which is basically about him and Zelda's. It kind of follows him and Zelda's actual relationship, but about a couple that has all this. It's beautiful from the outside, but on the inside they're having all these issues with mental illness. And
Tender as the Night?
Or? Yes, Tender as the Night. Okay. Thank you.
And then there's Americano, which is written about the same time in history and that whole group of people, where you see the relationship between him and Zelda and Ernest Hemingway and all the other, whatever, that whole gang. But that's more nonfiction, I suppose. But it's the same thing, these relationships that really are very toxic in many ways.
I would bring up Gone Girl as one of which is a particularly cleverly poisonous relationship and really does make you think.
That is the height of toxicity, I think. Are you going to say something?
No, I was going to say, that one I think is one that you actually can get under your skin and kind of get inside your head, and you look at people and go, what are you thinking?
Yeah. In terms of best couples in literature, though, ones to inspire us, maybe not think that the world is an awful place full of Amys and Nicks from Gone Girl. somebody mentioned to me the other day, Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine, and they're not technically a couple by the end of the book, but it is a wonderful relationship between Eleanor, who has all sorts of mental health issues but is delightful throughout the whole book, she's a wonderful character, and Raymond, the unassuming IT guy in the office, and the relationship that they have throughout that whole novel is absolutely wonderful and a big selling point for the book for me. Did you read that?
I read that and I agree, and I loved it. Actually, I listened to it, I heard the audiobook, and I agree that this is there's a sort of category of books that come in without necessarily the same romance element, but with these strong friendships or these strong optimistic relationships. And I think that Eleanor Oliphant is they're calling it uplit at the moment. So it's this genre that's potentially going to, there's a conversation constantly, it's going to overtake
Griplet
or domestic noir.
So domestic noir is out?
No, not yet. Because if you look at the charts, it's still very much up there. But Eleanor Oliphant is sort of showing the way. And it's been coming up in Ruth Hagen, The Keeper of Lost Things, books like that. And there have been a few really big deals done recently in British and American publishing for this type of book. So this time next year, they'll all be coming out. It'll be really interesting to see whether, as a backlash against the things that are happening in the world, people are looking for something with more optimism and humanity and hope and kindness and empathy.
It's really telling, isn't it, that we have clearly got to a point in reality where it has just got so bad that they're like, okay, fiction needs to be happy now. We're going to have to leave it there. If you're a fan of The Time Traveler's Wife, this may just be your next summer read. Imagine that your partner is really sick, and to obtain the only available cure, you have to agree to travel years into the future. And then your window of opportunity for seeing them again is jeopardized by time travel doing that thing it always does, messing everything up. That's next on The Bookshelf.
The Bookshelf, what you should be reading.
So with us in the studio, we have still Hanana Zahir, who is the writer and is a writer, and the founder of Dubai Literary Salon. She's been reviewing Less by Andrew Sean Greer for us and talking about some breakups or notable breakups in the wider literary world. And if some more pop into her head, she might chime in with those. We've also got Penny McKenzie on the show with us today, who is a longtime librarian at the Old Library, which has just announced that it will have a new space and will be open from October.
Hopefully from October, they just have to do the fit out.
And remind us where, because we announced this a while ago, so...
It will be at the Golden Diamond Park, which is near a metro station. So that is really good news for those of you who don't drive.
That is fantastic news. So We are talking about a different book now. It's a debut novel by Thea Lim. I don't think it's even on the shelves here yet, so this is quite exciting. It's called An Ocean of Minutes. And would you mind starting us off with a description of what it's about, Penny?
Yes, so I'm going to do a very rough description. So we're looking at 1981. The population of the world is dying in vast numbers because of a rather unfortunate, grim illness. We're not told what it is. But they have found a way of curing it, but I think it seems to be very expensive. And if you want to get cured and you don't have an awful lot of money, you can opt to travel to the future and work off nominating people who have got the illness already. So you can't travel if you're ill, but if you're not ill, you can pay for someone to get better by traveling to the future. So this is how it all starts. And it's basically a love story that unfolds in time, in the past and in the future, looking backwards. It's quite complicated in that
You've got
regard.
These two characters. You've got Polly and you have Frank, don't you? And Frank is the one who is really, really sick. And Polly is the one who has to travel into the future in exchange for a cure. Right?
Very impetuously, if I may say.
Yes. Well, Polly and Frank have found themselves in a different part of they've traveled down to Texas for this is where they're stuck when the virus really breaks and suddenly borders start closing, quarantine starts happening. They can't travel back to Buffalo, where they
yes,
come from.
Yes, absolutely. But that's kind of like not really, it just makes it confusing when they finally get to where they're going.
Yeah. So Frank has become ill and they're in their 20s. And the answer is for Polly to travel forward as essentially a bonded worker for Time Razor, which is the company that has it's also a sort of analogy for big business, isn't it? It's big business that starts to control so very much of what people do and what they can do and what they work.
It is very dystopian in that way. And she is not very savvy, so she doesn't do her research before she goes.
So she's expecting to be sent a certain period of time in the future, but that doesn't happen, right?
She is passionately head over heels in love, as we were talking before, and she will do anything to save Frank.
Yeah, yeah. It's very interesting because when you first meet them and when she makes this decision, you feel she's very passionately in love. Then when she goes to the future and she starts reflecting on the relationship that they had, it's a very flawed relationship. She is a damaged person and he seems to come from such a, you know, he's got a wholesome family, a supportive mother and brothers and sisters-ish, whereas she comes, she's an orphan, she clings to him a little bit. And I, while I was reading the whole, I thought, you know, is this going to stand the test of time? Is he going to wait for her for X number of years? And she keeps making bad decisions. She gets on the wrong bus. She doesn't ask the right questions. She is just, I don't know, both books, I wanted to shake the characters. All you have to do is tap the concierge or tap the guy at the information counter on the shoulder and say, please give me information.
There are so many points in films where I have this reaction as well. But, Penny, there wouldn't be a story otherwise if people weren't a little bit stupid in literature.
Do you know what? I don't entirely agree with that because a really well-written book doesn't need a lot of loops.
It doesn't need to create conflict in an external sort of way. It comes within it. Well, what's interesting in this one, so Polly is meant to go forward to 1993. And when she arrives, she's in 1998. And that happens very early on. We can give that bit away. Yeah, it's not a spoiler.
But so what?
Yeah.
So what? It would have been equally difficult for her if she'd arrived at the time she was supposed to arrive.
And but they'd arranged to meet, though.
Yeah, but they'd made a backup plan. As it turns out, it wasn't a particularly good backup plan. But again, I mean, for her, the other thing that's so interesting about this book is she's only lived however many months, you know.
That's
and then
the
you
point.
Have to keep remembering that Frank has lived 12, well, now 15 years?
15 years.
18 years? 16 years?
Yeah, well, 16 because he's got a daughter who's 14. don't listen to that. But the thing is that there is a tiny amount of time that's passed for her when she first lands and starts to try and find him. And for him, it's years. But you don't know what he's thinking because we don't get the story from his perspective. We get it from hers.
So what works about
it? So at no point in the book is it from his perspective?
Yes, but only in the past.
Only in the past,
so
yeah.
What works about it is we're interspersing a chapter from 1980, from when they first meet, I think, forward, going forward. And interspersed with that is the chapter in the in Polly's present tense, which is 1998. And so the experience of it, I mean, as you said, it has elements of a dystopian novel because she's fast-forwarded into a future which is utterly different to where she's come from and where life is very, very hard because I think 93% of the population is gone. It's something like that. They're having to rebuild and find a new way of rebuilding a future, which they're doing in a very basic way with essentially bonded workers coming from the past into the present.
Two questions. One is, this book can't be talked about by anybody without mentioning the time traveller's wife. Do you think that that is fair or is it not
no.
at all like it?
No, I think that the time traveller's wife is covering a completely different set of emotions. This book is it's showing you a little window into what it must be like to be thrown into a refugee situation, into forced immigration, whether it's through through war or through economic political yeah. situations, through disease. It's really a good way of making you understand how, and I like the fact that she is from the First World and that she gets thrown into the situation and makes a decision and goes into the future, and she is nothing and nobody.
The author's actually spoken about this. Now, often it's an interesting subject when a writer starts saying about how a book started off as one thing and then morphed into something else as they were writing it. This is Thea Lim on how An Ocean of Minutes turned into something else.
Yeah. So what it turned into, which was kind of unexpected for me, but it turned into an analogy for immigration. And then I was like a little stressed because it seemed sort of obvious.
Yeah.
And I felt like I got to write faster in case someone scoops me. but the reason why it seemed obvious is because when people immigrate, they lose not just place, not just proximity to kind of their familiar places, but also time, because yeah. all these ideas they had about what their life would look like, it all shifts, it disappears, and it feels like a death.
So Thea Lim there on An Ocean of Minutes turning into an analogy for immigration. I think, like you said, the time traveler's wife connection that publishers are kind of mentioning with is either on the book or whenever anybody talks about the book, it's like they have to compare it to something and that's what they're comparing it to.
It's an easy hook, but they're very different types of books and types of relationships, I think.
I think so, yeah. And not just that, this is quite an ambitious book. Novel. She has covered so many different subjects within this, to do with politics, to do with geography, to do with big business, to do with human relationships, to do with memory and
power.
Expectation. I mean, she's really tried to cram a lot in. Give her her due. She could have made it a lot simpler and it would be much more of a page turner. But it's great that she's done it.
Yeah.
No one else has done this.
I haven't read this book yet, but all your conversation about it is reminding me very much of Mohsen Hamid's Exit West. He was here in Dubai a few months ago at the Literary Salon and talking about the exact same things and how in his book also I think there are portals taking people to different places and just different geography, locations, memory, like all of the things, Penny, that you just mentioned. So I'd be curious. I'm actually very intrigued by this. I'd love to pick it up and read it.
I would say that we've read proof copies. I would say that it could do with another couple of weeks of editing. I don't know how they've printed it, how it's come out at the end.
But I think overall it's a really interesting read and it's got a lot to say and it's definitely worth reading. So,
yeah, and I come from, I think, Hanana, you will agree with me on this. We both come from countries where we understand what it means for people to be refugees, whether it's economic, whether it's political,
right.
and what it does to people and what it does to families. And I like the fact that it's been put onto somebody from the First World and then that kind of places.
Which is interesting because I think often people are moving from the Third World, let's say, to the First World, and you can not account for, you know, you can account for sort of not understanding the differences in how people grew up, but most people in our worlds can relate to the context of this book, it sounds like.
That's about all we have time for, unfortunately, on the bookshelf. That's it.
Oh, no.
I'm so sorry. Thank you so much to Penny and Hanana for coming on to talk about Less by Andrew Sean Greer and An Ocean of Minutes by Thea Lim and a bunch of other books in between as well about heartbreak and love and lots of really big emotions. Thank you so much.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.